Taking time to eat a proper meal does not only fill you up nicely, it gives your brain and your body a rest from your screen. So studies show that it may seem that you save time by eating whilst you're working, but if you actually step away from your desk regularly, you will work better and more efficiently afterwards.
Hey everyone, this is Ben Morton and welcome to episode 29 of the show, which is another of our subject matter expert episodes. Today we're joined by Carola Becker, who I'm very grateful to have gotten to know over the past 4 years or so. Carola is a forward-thinking nutritionist and fitness instructor with a real focus on brain health and peak performance. As well as running her own business, she works as our own in-house nutritionist here at Ben Morton Leadership. As a speaker, she's been delivering cutting-edge, inspirational and engaging sessions on nutrition and lifestyle for leading organisations in the UK and Europe, including the European Athletics Coaching Association. Carola works with large organisations and individuals so that they can shape rewarding food and lifestyle routines that will last a lifetime. All this is designed to give them a greater feeling of well-being and be more ready for the challenges that life throws at them. On a personal note, I highly recommend Carola's services, her insight, her wisdom, as she was instrumental in helping me to prepare for riding the entire Tour de France route for charity in the summer of 2019. Without her support, I wouldn't have gotten around that route in anywhere near as good a shape as I did. Carola is also part of the complementary therapy team at the University of Exeter and runs some award-winning wellbeing retreats in absolutely amazing locations. I really wanted to get Carola onto the show after watching a recording of a webinar she ran focused on healthy eating and peak performance during the COVID-19 pandemic, and especially whilst we are all working from home with lots of temptations close at hand. So, without any further delay, let's dive right in and please enjoy my conversation with my colleague and friend, Carola Becker. Carola, a very warm welcome to the episode. How are you doing today?
Oh, thank you so much, Ben, for having me. I'm really doing well. Thanks very much.
Brilliant. And I have to say, I am really delighted to have you on the show today because I understand you are a award-winning nutritionist and host of retreats. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. Brand new, hot off the press just last week. Super excited that we won the Silver Award in the Devon Tourism Awards for the Wellbeing Experience of the Year. We're really, really elated about that.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And seeing as we've started talking about that, just tell us a little bit, if you can, kind of about those wellbeing retreats, kind of what it was. And I know you've got some exciting plans for developing it in the future. Is that right?
Yes, indeed. Absolutely. So I'm running the retreats together with my friend and colleague, Dr. Vicky Barnes, who is a psychologist. And we started from the very beginning. We wanted to give the whole thought of well-being a completely different twist, because we are firm believers that well-being should happen on a daily basis, not only over those 3 or 4 days where you are in an amazing location and sipping champagne and occasionally get up from your sun lounger to get a massage. That is awesome. But there's so much more to it. And it's about the things you take home and you take away from it and include into your busy life from there. And it's really great to see that this approach has been recognized by the judges, and we're super excited. So in September, we will stay in the UK in a beautiful castle near Plymouth, which it will be exclusively ours for a little group of men and women. Imagine, we got 50% men booked. And towards the end of the year, we're venturing to North Africa, to Morocco or Tunisia. It's not quite confirmed yet. And next year in January, we're going skiing in Colorado.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I love what you said, Carola, about, I think you said wellbeing is something that you should or you do daily, which is really interesting. It's something I talk about a lot when I'm working with senior leadership teams. Mm-hmm. I have this phrase that building a great team isn't something you do once or twice a year offsite at a nice hotel, but it's something you do every single day, often through the seemingly insignificant, mundane tasks and activities. It sounds like you've got exactly the same approach and mindset with well-being, right?
Indeed. It's really important that it's not only about looking after your teams, it's looking after yourself, because you can only be an amazing leader if you are in a good space, and this is mentally as well as physically. And I think this is where our work is so aligned, yours and mine, that we're really trying to instill in people that well-being is not some fluffy topic. It makes a difference to your revenue at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And the point around the sort of daily activities and the daily focus is so important, right? Because there are loads of analogies around this and sayings. It's not what you do once in a while that counts, but what you do every single day, and consistency compounds over time. And it's the British cycling kind of theory of marginal gains, right? All the little differences over time add up. And it's like, I think sort of well-being from a nutritional point, which we'll get onto in a minute, it's the same or similar as going to the gym. Like if you go to the gym and do bicep curls five days a week, like probably for 3 or 4 weeks, you're going to notice very little difference other than maybe sore arms. But suddenly in 4 weeks, in 2 months, you look back and you've really kind of made gains, right? Because all those little daily habits, daily activities add up to make quite a difference over time.
Yes, absolutely. And especially when we're talking about this preparation, I always try to help people understand that it's about preparing your body for the stressful situation, for the pressure you put it under. No matter if that's pressure in terms of activity or pressure in terms of your brain performance, it's about preparing instead of repairing.
So, Carola, we've dived right in and got into the good stuff already, but let's just pause and take a second. Do you mind just, for the listeners, obviously I know you very well, but for those listening, can you just give everybody a bit of background around kind of what it is you do and the journey that's got you to where you are, if you don't mind?
Yes, absolutely. More than happy to. So my name is Carola Becker. I'm a nutritionist and fitness instructor, and my passion has always been mental well-being and brain performance, simply because they go hand in hand. I base my work on science and help leaders and teams to eat well and live better for increased focus and more energy for their busy lives. Because the people I work with, they know that their body has let them get away with the way they live for the last 20 years. And they probably think at some point, ooh, I better change something now, because I need to be on top of my game for the next 20 years.
Yeah, I love that. And we've spoken about this before, but I think it was probably 5 years ago, I had this real moment of realization, because up until then, my mindset had always been, this was probably largely driven by 10 years in the military. My mindset was always, I'm fit, I'm healthy, I've got a good metabolism, I've generally got an okay diet, so I can pretty much get away with eating, drinking what I like, because I'll exercise it off and I've got a good metabolism. And then it was linked partly as well. I liked your And then my realization was also linked to my mum being diagnosed with dementia and starting to do some research into that. I suddenly realized that the choices I'm making now around lifestyle, exercise, particularly what I'm eating and drinking, actually doesn't just affect what I'm like today, tomorrow, next week. What I'm doing now is going to have an impact on what I'm like in 10, 20, 30, 40 years as an old man. And for me, it really was suddenly thinking, like, if there's anything I can do to prevent myself going down the road and having the health challenges that my mum has got, so my daughter doesn't have to go through kind of what my sister and I are going through in terms of looking after our mum, then that suddenly becomes really important. And that was a huge catalyst for change for me.
Absolutely. I fully agree. And it's one of those things, because dementia and Alzheimer's and all the other brain illnesses, we are just currently at a situation where we're finding out how much it is actually in our hands to change something. And sadly, the people who are suffering now from Alzheimer's and dementia, they didn't know that. Science is now at a stage where we can find out how much it's in our hands to change the way our brain ages. And this is in men as well as in women. We know that in women, the menopause has a massive impact on the way our brain ages, but men going through a similar way of aging. And it's just about important to see that we are not helpless. There's so many things we can do, and nutrition and exercise are definitely two of them.
And Carola, having been talking about changes now to help us a long way off in the future, I'd like to focus us very much on the here and now, if I can.
Of course.
I think whilst many of us are working from home, I think depending on how you look at that and your perspective, working from home could create a huge opportunity for healthy eating and our energy levels. Or it could present a massive risk born out of all of the bad temptations that are in our fridges and cupboards, depending on what our weekly shop looks like. So I'd just love to get your take on this, and what are some of sort of the most basic things we could be thinking about in terms of eating for health, energy, brain performance, whilst we are all cooped up and working from home.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Eating and exercising has changed for many of us dramatically over the last 12 months. Basically, the whole world was turned on its head. And as you say, there was certainly an opportunity, because we were no longer relying on meal deals from a supermarket or some sort of quick food outlets. And we could have really made healthy changes. But hand on heart, who actually did it? Because the temptations, like you said, of working 3 meters away from the fridge is possibly more the negative side than the positive side. Many of my clients have reported there are no real meal times anymore, because you work either in the dining room or in the kitchen, and there's a lot of snacking going on. And I hear a lot about eating whilst working, where there's another moment, because a few changes to your meals will make a massive difference to your brain health and your brain performance. Of course, it's super tempting to skip breakfast and snack all day rather than taking a proper break. And snacks can be great. The risk is that you may lose track about the simple amount of food you're eating, because snacking for some people is just mindless munching. You'll just continue with your hand in a bag of something. And sometimes snacks are just not particularly well balanced either. Taking time to eat a proper meal does not only fill you up nicely, it gives your brain and your body a rest from your screen. So studies show that it may seem that you save time by eating whilst you're working, but if you actually step away from your desk regularly, you will work better and more efficiently afterwards.
Yeah, I think that's so important, isn't it? Again, it's especially now, I guess some people are lucky enough to have a sort of good workstation at home, and they kind of might have a decent chair. Many people don't. I've seen many pictures on social media of people using ironing boards and upturned laundry baskets as a makeshift stand-up desk. but if you are sort of sitting working at your dining room table, those dining room table chairs aren't designed to be sat at all day, or on your sofa, or lots of younger people kind of in shared flats working on their beds. So actually getting up from that sort of suboptimal sitting position for any reason is really important, yes. Right? But if you can get up and prepare a healthy meal and sit somewhere different and eat it, it's really, really important. Yeah.
And the other thing we mustn't forget is resting your eyes, because you're sitting in front of a screen, I don't know, 8 hours a day. And just on occasion, getting up, looking out of the window, letting your eyes rest a little bit makes a big difference. I have spoken to so many people who need glasses this year because they have constantly sitting at their desks and not doing anything, because you're not even getting up anymore to see a colleague at the next office or something. You're just sitting there and doing stuff. So those breaks are really important. The other thing before we come to the foods is hydration. I always need to remind people about being hydrated. All your organs, including your brain, obviously, need fluids to work properly. Keeping tea and coffee intake a little bit lower than we tend to and stick to water, unsweetened herbal or fruit teas. And you can eat your water. I mean, there's so many people who don't like plain water. I'm one of them, by the way. But you can, I don't know, cucumber, tomatoes, lettuce, berries, all of that, super high in water. So you don't necessarily need to have your water bottle with you all the time. But making sure that you're eating enough fruit and vegetables with a high water content. But on top of that, I would still say a bottle of water at your desk or on your kitchen counter, wherever you pass all the time, that would be a good thing, just simply to remind you to take a little sip of something to drink.
Great reminder, Carola. Hang on a second, see if this is going to work.
Well done. I can hear it nicely.
Amazing. Carola, in preparing for today's podcast, I was watching a couple of your recent webinar recordings, mm-hmm. and there was something you said in one of them that really, really struck me. Is where you was talking about the 3 p.m. slump and how we get that dip in energy mid-afternoon, and how people often ask you what they should be eating around this time to help, to sort of help them stay focused for the final part of the day.
Yeah.
And I believe your answer was something along the lines of, well, actually, it's not about what we need to eat at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when our energy dips, but it's about rewinding and thinking about what did we eat at lunch that's perhaps causing that 3 p.m. slump, or what can we eat that would prevent it? So with that in mind, I'd love you just to talk about that a little bit. And I guess particularly if you could sort of focus in on some suggestions around what a good lunch looks like, as opposed to sticking something between two slices of bread.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, more than happy to. First of all, thank you very much for being part of the webinars and revisiting them afterwards. That's exactly what I wanted to achieve. Brilliant. I think after years of working with my clients, I can safely say if you eat a balanced lunch, light yet substantial, and I'll get to that in a second, you can literally forget about the chocolate craving in the afternoon. Yes, of course, for most of us, the time slot between breakfast and lunch is shorter than the one between lunch and dinner, because there's always more time. But having a good balance of slow-releasing carbohydrates, protein and fat to keep your energy levels even, you can avoid those energy slumps in the afternoon. The best carbohydrates would be oats, all whole grain versions of rice and pasta, most fruit and vegetables, and pulses. I think it's one of those things we simply forget to eat pulses. When was the last time you have been eating lentils, Ben? Come on, tell me.
I'm not too bad on that, actually. I did have a very nice sweet potato and chickpea curry with some spinach last night.
Oh, so, well done.
Partly from working with you, Carola, I have massively increased the amount of pulses. Lentils in my diet, actually.
Exactly. The protein can come, obviously, either from an animal source, but you can choose plant sources as well. So we're looking either at lean meat or even fatty fish, beans, and again, pulses, but nuts and seeds are very high in protein as well. And when we're choosing healthy fats, you can look at olives and their oil, obviously, and the aforementioned nuts and seeds, just to have a good balance of all of them. So just as a few ideas, a great lunch would be a salad from a leftover vegetable from last night. So if you have something from your curry left, just add it to a few fresh leaves, the cucumber because of the water intake. And if you want to, you can add in some sliced chicken or some tuna from a tin, because that is it for lunch. It's all about quick, to have a quick meal. If you prefer a sandwich, make the filling the star of the show. Mash up some chickpeas with herbs and sunflower seeds and lots of lettuce, and you're good to go. If you don't mind turning the hob on, an omelette with a handful of spinach or even some smoked salmon for lunch is a really good meal to keep you going through the afternoon.
Oh, Carola, stop it. So it's 12 o'clock as we're recording this, and you're making me hungry. So, Carola, the other thing I wanted to ask you about again on your webinar, you spoke quite a lot, I believe, around five key elements, I think is the right terminology. I'm going to list four, and I must admit, I can't remember the fifth, but you spoke about antioxidants, you spoke about magnesium, omega-3, zinc, and there was one other. I wonder if you could just tell us briefly again, kind of why those five and what the fifth is, why they're so important, and some suggestions about how we can make sure we're getting sufficient quantities of them in our diets.
Yes, sure. I mean, obviously, for me as a nutritionist, I always refer to foods rather than supplements. And there are a number of nutrients which are absolutely crucial for your brain. And it's not about finding super exotic ingredients on the internet. We're talking about everyday foods. And by the time you know about them, there's a lot you can do to help your brain just by simply eating the right foods. So let's just start with the antioxidants. Inflammation and stress can lead to higher risk of memory loss and, because we talked about it earlier, dementia and Alzheimer's, because this inflammation leads to a reduced communication between your brain cells. And one of the best ways to work against this and help your brain is actually consuming antioxidants. You may have heard about them before as the intensely colored foods. Blueberries are always on top of everybody's list. But then there's more. You can have the green leafy vegetables like spinach or chard maybe. Tomatoes and Brazil nuts are really high in antioxidants, as well as kidney beans, cinnamon and ginger. So you can, I don't know, if you want to have your porridge in the morning and you just sprinkle some cinnamon on top, you've got your first little portion of antioxidants for the day. The second one is magnesium. Magnesium is just awesome. It's just one of the most important minerals for optimal health, mental as well as physical. We call it the relaxation mineral. It relaxes your muscles as well as your brain for more calm, better mood and better sleep. You can find the foods which are high in magnesium is almonds, cashew nuts, Brazil nuts, and again, green leafy vegetables.
Just on the magnesium one, Carola, and I understand your point around kind of focusing on foods, but again, something we've spoken about before was a number of years ago, I had some detailed blood work done. And one of the things it highlighted was I was very low in magnesium. Mm-hmm. So I started taking magnesium citrate in the evening before bed.
Yes.
Which has been incredible in terms of, I've sort of struggled with sleep quite a lot. Also, when I get tired, I get quite bad sort of restless leg syndrome. Mm-hmm. And actually, I really notice when I'm taking my magnesium supplement regularly, the quality of my sleep improves dramatically, and I don't really kind of get that horrible sort of twitchy ankle, restless leg kind of in the evening. So magnesium has been really significant for me.
Yeah, I agree. When you were so low, like in your particular case, Ben, you were very, very low in magnesium when, after the results from your blood work came back. That's the moment when I refer to supplements. It's only once your levels have been topped up by the supplement, I always refer to foods to sort out the maintenance, if you like. If you would like to increase your intake of almonds and cashew nuts, and the Brazil nuts are actually very good for you too, because they're high in selenium, and which is very interesting for athletes like you. So if you ever want to get out of your on your bike again, your Brazil nuts should be part of your diet again.
I'll stick some in my pocket on my next ride.
Exactly.
So let's move on and talk omega-3, Carola.
Yes. Ah, one of my all-time favorites. Omega-3 is a fatty acid, which is critical for the function of the central nervous system. And a lack of omega-3 has actually been linked to cognitive decline, poor comprehension, and low mood. So if you like fish, salmon, tuna, and mackerel, and all the fatty fishes are your best friends, omega-3 is actually better absorbed when it comes from an animal source. So that's important. If any of your listeners is vegetarian or vegan, you can have walnuts, chia seeds, or ground flax seeds. They are acceptable. But omega-3 is one of the trickier nutrients in terms for vegetarians and vegans.
Good stuff. Next up is zinc.
Another great mineral. It actually helps you sleep better. That would be another one to bear in mind if you ever struggle with your sleep again, because zinc works really well together with magnesium. They both support each other. And zinc can actually reduce anxiety. It helps regulating the communication between your brain cells. You can find zinc in red meat and poultry. Oysters, crab, and lobster are really good sources too, but be aware that crab and lobster are very high in sodium, which is for some people a cause for concern, so you may want to be careful with that one. For the vegetarians and vegans, if you prefer your zinc coming from a plant source, go for whole grains, pumpkin seeds, and cashew nuts. Lots of good stuff. The fifth one,
the fifth one that I can't remember.
It was vitamin D.
Of course.
We are thankfully now coming into springtime when the days are a little bit longer, but the NHS and I agree that during the winter months, a vitamin D supplement is a very good idea, because we're just simply not getting enough sunlight. And even if you are outside in winter, it's only your face which is exposed to daylight, and it should be a little bit more of your body which is exposed to the daylight. So from now onwards, hopefully, we're getting a little bit of more daylight in, and our body can make its own vitamin D. In terms of the food you can eat to get your vitamin D in, it's another tricky one for vegetarians and vegans, because it's mainly eggs, dairy, and meat and fish which contain vitamin D. There is a plant of mushrooms contain a little bit of vitamin D, but it might not be enough depending on how much you're eating of them. So vitamin D is probably one where a supplement all year round for a vegan or vegetarian might be helpful.
Amazing. Carola, I think probably two final questions for you. Mm-hmm. Let's go with the big one next. Let's talk about alcohol. So from what supermarket sales and from people's social media posts, all that would suggest that many people have gotten through their various lockdowns in the past 12 months fueled by gin and wine, I think.
Yeah.
But what really is the impact of alcohol on sort of mood, mental health, physical health, mental performance? Like, talk to us briefly about alcohol.
Yeah, sadly, it's not really helpful. I mean, it may not come as a surprise if I tell you that. And I perfectly agree that over those last 12 months, it was probably one of the go-to things where I said, well, I really deserved my glass of wine, or I deserved my gin and tonic. But whenever I work with somebody one-to-one, or even in talks, the one thing I ask people to take away is reducing the amount of alcohol they're drinking. It's actually a myth that a glass of red wine is good for your heart, sadly. So not even that counts as an excuse. Alcohol is a nerve poison, which is directly linked to poor mental health, reduced lateral thinking, and we all know how much it impacts decision making, sadly. In terms of physical health, I think this is actually fascinating. Your liver is an absolutely clever organ. It prioritizes. So all day long, it's busy metabolizing foods and extracting nutrients and detoxing happily along. But the moment alcohol enters your system, the alarm goes off and everything comes to a halt. Your entire metabolism is being stopped. No nutrients are being extracted from food until the alcohol is being dealt with by the liver.
Oh, wow, I did not know that.
So depending on the amount of alcohol you're drinking, this can take up to 12 hours. So unfortunately, alcohol does not only affect your mental well-being, it affects your physical well-being as well, because literally whatever good food you have just been eating, your body can't take anything away from it and can't utilize any of it because your liver is busy dealing with the alcohol. So I perfectly understand that a glass of red wine goes wonderfully with a steak or a glass of white wine with a piece of fish, but your body really doesn't have anything of the goodness once you're drinking your red wine. Sorry.
That's fascinating and a little upsetting. Carola, this next one is very much something I'm curious about, actually. I think lots of people these days have switched to sort of milk dairy alternatives, mm-hmm. either for environmental reasons, because people are becoming much more aware and tuned into sort of intolerances and stuff like that. I just wonder, are there any particular hidden dangers with all of the kind of milk alternatives, be they oat, soya, almond, or whatever, in mm-hmm. terms of, are they particularly higher in fat? Are they higher in sugar? I know most of them you can get the unsweetened version, but mm-hmm. kind of, yeah, just I'd love to get your take and a bit more information on those milk alternatives we're seeing so much of.
Absolutely. Yes, I remember well when we were working on your diet, your dairy intolerance was one of the big topics when we tried to find alternatives. And yes, of course, you're right. Plant milk and plant-based yogurt and all of the vegan cheese and those sorts of things, they have become more and more popular, not only amongst vegans. All regular plant milks are fortified with nutrients. And as far as I know, all plant dairy, I would say, for all the other alternatives are fortified as well. So you just to ensure that people get a relatively good intake of vitamin D, B12 and calcium. Please bear in mind that if you prefer the organic plant milk versions, they are by law not allowed to add anything. And if they are not allowed to add anything, they are not allowed to add any vitamins or minerals either.
Okay.
So if you want to have the added minerals and vitamins, you have to use the non-organic alternatives. In terms of the additives, well, it's a little bit of a tricky one, because obviously they need to make sure that it's still a good consistency and a good quality. So there are additives in there. As far as I know, there's not any sort of health risk. It's just the question, how much additives would you like in your diet? So that the fat content is of no concern at all, because most plant milks are very low in fat, mainly because the amount of almonds, the nuts, the soya is really quite low. There's mm-hmm. not much in it apart from water and a little bit of the nut or soya bean. But be aware that if you prefer the sweetened versions, they are really quite high in sugar. So I would always prefer the unsweetened versions. In terms of the vegan cheeses, I haven't tried all of them yet. I always take myself a little bit as a guinea pig. I haven't found one yet that tastes nice. Please, if any of your listeners has any vegan cheese they like, please let me know which one you like, because I'd love to taste it.
The only one I've found that kind of works for me is, I think it's the Vio Life sort of spreadable sort of Philadelphia alternative.
Oh, right. Okay.
Which is actually doesn't taste too much different from what I remember to sort of a normal spreadable soft cheese. I often use that as a snack on some vegetable sticks or sort of oat cake or something. That's actually okay.
Yeah, I understand. I think it's more about finding alternatives. It's interesting that you just say that with the vegetable sticks. I don't know. I would probably go for some hummus rather than finding a vegan cheese, or not eating the yogurt rather than eating a yogurt which tastes in a way which I wouldn't prefer. So I think it's more about finding alternatives. Obviously, if you would like to have your porridge or your cereal in the morning, you need something which sort of resembles milk. And I don't know, I think most of them taste actually quite acceptable. It's just the question, would you like the real milk taste or the real cheese taste? And then it becomes a little bit trickier.
Yeah, absolutely. Carola, it's always enjoyable, fun, insightful, fascinating talking to you. So thank you so much for coming on the show today. Before you go, kind of the final thing to ask really is, where can people get in touch with you and connect with you? How can they find out more about your webinars, retreats, online courses that you run, and kind of how can people connect with you generally?
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Ben. My web address is www.carolabecker.com, where you can find all the information about my work, my speaking engagements, the retreats, the online courses. Just like you said, you can find me on LinkedIn under my name, Carola Becker, and on all social media varieties under Carola Nutrition.
Amazing. We'll put Carola's web address in the show notes for you folks, so you can just scroll down and click on that. And all that leaves me to say, Carola, thank you so much for joining us today. I know you are taking a week off as we're recording this, so enjoy the rest of your time off.
Thank you very much, Ben, for having me. Such a pleasure talking to you as always. Thank you.
As always, folks, I hope you found that conversation really valuable. But most importantly, as always, I hope that you can go away and do something as a result. Make some positive changes. If you did get value from the episode, then please do rate, review, and subscribe via iTunes, as it enables us to keep bringing you more and more episodes of the show. And when you go, why not swing by ben-morton.com, where you can connect with me, sign up to my mailing list, find out more about my leadership mentoring and team development work, along with details of all of my online programs via the tools and resources page. That's it for this episode. See you again, hopefully, in episode 30. Take care and lead on.